Hello, and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week is the official beginning of our Hardwired Island campaign, Borrowed Light. So come join Hecate, Cal, Matchstick, Ing, and the rest of Grand Cross as they face down the tumult of the far future year of 2020. And welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hi, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Cato Burke, also known as Hecate, also known as, Who Sent You?
Hi, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Cal Armitage, a.k.a. Officer.
I'm Dez, and I'll be playing Matchstick, a.k.a. What are you, a cop?
Hi, my name is Nick, and I will be playing Ing, also known as Ohm, your friendly neighborhood android.
Excellent. Thank you all. I'm so excited to be doing this. And listeners, if you heard episode zero, you got some background on the system and setting for Hardwired Island. But here I'm going to summarize the nuts and bolts as efficiently as I can. Then we'll let the rest of the information kind of emerge during play. I want to make sure to note that we are going to be ramping up. This system is a little more complex than what we usually have tackled on this podcast so far. And, you know, having read through it a number of times, there is, you know, just some stuff that we're going to be getting used to. So we're going to ease our players into it, and we are going to ease you guys into it. And hopefully it'll all be just fine. So. Hardwired Island is a retro-future cyberpunk game with an emphasis on kind of taking the punk part fairly seriously. It's a little more grounded in a lot of ways, and it's a lot about, like, community and direct action, and a little less about using a laser katana to cut a dude in half. Though I can't guarantee that no laser katanas will be used to cut dudes in half. Yeah. So...
just so long as none of the dudes are us,
hopefully. The basic
dudes
rip strokes,
broadly, I suppose.
Oh yeah, yeah. The basic strokes are this: mechanically, Hardwired Island uses a 2d6 system where you roll 2 6-sided dice, add specialties, which are sort of the things that your character has experience or skill in, as well as other bonuses. Rolls can be boosted, which add rolls. They can be given advantage or disadvantage, which adds additional dice, and then you take the highest or lowest two, depending on advantage or disadvantage. Player harm also factors in. It's a flat penalty numerically, and then as harm ramps up, you roll a die and subtract that from your roll. There also is prep, which is part of the structure of play before missions, whether they're designed by our player characters to undertake or given to them by other NPCs. You have a preparation phase where you accrue a resource called prep that is measured both per character and with group prep that you can then spend during the mission to get bonuses or extra dice. You know, on the outside, you can basically instigate a flashback that says, here's why I'm prepared for this situation that gives me this bonus or advantage. Other features of the system include moods, systems that you're hacking, arenas that you're fighting in, social situations that you're in can all have various moods that, you know, affect different actions that you take in those moods differently. As well as different situations, as well as different items can have tags, right? This one is illegal, that one is dangerous. You know, there are combinations of tags that you can put together. We will let the rest of the information emerge during play if all that sounds like a lot. It kind of is, but it also coheres, I think, fairly soundly. And for the early episodes, we'll leave a lot of the system questions and looking things up mostly in. And then as we get further on, as it's necessary, we'll take it out. My plan is for both our players and our listeners to limit the complexity early on, but rapidly add to it so that we don't get into bad habits vis-a-vis the system, and we eventually get comfortable with it. If there are no urgent questions from our players, he says, gesturing so that they can ask questions if they have them. Excellent. Then I'm going to get a little bit into the setting. Hardwired Island is set on a space station that is also a city of approximately 2.5 million people called Grand Cross. Grand Cross is the result of something of an alternate history to our own. In the mid-90s, a major asteroid impacted the Earth, sort of jump-starting a space boom. Technology and science and space travel and space habitation all got massive shots in the arm as people realized that as long as humans are confined to one planet, they're vulnerable to those kinds of catastrophes. This had some knock-on effects. The impact itself and the recovery from it sort of realigned the global power structure to a large degree, reinvented the global economy. Institutional sexism is certainly still a thing. Institutional racism is certainly still a thing, but they are perhaps a little less forceful than they used to be because the voracious appetite of the space boom exceeded what white men could supply. And so, pragmatic as capitalism can sometimes be, it turned to other supplies of labor and expertise. Other things that are different. Artificial general intelligence has been achieved. Androids are a thing. They are patterned off of human sort of thought patterns and are mostly under 15 and largely under 10 years old. But, you know, they sort of emerge adult, you know, by the time they're embodied. Android rights are a cause in a lot of places on Earth and in orbit. In terms of in orbit, there have been other steps on the way to Grand Cross. There is a lunar colony. There are other space stations, none on the scale of Grand Cross, and others that are large but don't have permanent inhabitants the way Grand Cross does. Grand Cross itself is the result of a wide participation treaty, the Lagrange Treaty, I believe it is called, that sort of allows for its building from member nations. But Grand Cross itself is an independent nation in the stars intended to act as humanity's sort of launch pad into the solar system and later beyond it. To this end, Grand Cross is populated by people who have been selected either by lottery or by auction or by some other system from a number of nations back on Earth. There are people who were born on Grand Cross, certainly, but they are none of them really older than 10 years old and most of them under 8. So they're not going to really be player characters for the most part. Everybody else came up either after having had an adult life on Earth, or in the case of the so-called double crossers, you know, maybe they completed high school on Earth, but most of them are younger than that, you know, have come up to Grand Cross. Other population segments include the builders, who were ones who, in exchange for helping to construct, design, and finish the station, sort of got homes there. As well as the L4 refugees. The EU had an Icelandic-built space station on the model of Grand Cross called Skuggavarf at the L4 Earth-Moon point that suffered a catastrophic accident, and those who survived had to be evacuated, most of them to Grand Cross. So this is one of the reasons why Grand Cross is in crisis currently. Grand Cross opened officially in 2017, though it had been populated to some degree since around 2013, and its first elections were held and honored at that point, so its second set of elections is coming up here in 2020. To the degree that it matters, Grand Cross uses a assembly and Senate, which are elected differently, but both are versions of preferential voting. It otherwise operates on a modified Westminster system where the executive branch is selected from the ruling party in the legislature. The long and short of it is that the Senate, which is smaller and elected less often, has more representation for smaller groups and fringe parties than the Assembly, which has most of the power and is elected every 3 years, and is mostly represented by the major four parties, with a plurality from the major two parties. Those two parties are Union, which is a liberal capitalist pro-orbit party, and Unity, which is a conservative capitalist pro-Earth party. The other element here is that there is sort of an open secret organization called the Offworld Cartel, consisting of a lot of corporations that have interests in spacefaring, orbital enterprises, as it were, and they are the bankrollers of the Unity Party. So they currently have sort of de facto control over policy at one remove. And if they were to win again in 2020, it is likely that, policy and life on the station would get a lot different. They have managed to implement a lot of their pet policies through the Unity Party in the last 3 years, but certainly not a total victory. Grand Cross, as I think I mentioned during Session Zero, started off as a relatively kind of progressive experimental system in 2013 and has been slowly co-opted by existing nations on Earth and off-world cartel members since then. But this has also engendered quite a lot of resistance from among the population of Grand Cross, who tend to like the place a lot and want to stay there, but also want to have it be something that they have a say in. Our particular slice of Grand Cross is going to come into focus a little bit more in a moment, but I'll pause here and see if our players have any questions or anything that I may have missed.
I just want to make sure I heard that right. The parties are Union and Unity. That is, yes. In-world, a good joke and intentionally confusing, yes?
Indeed. Mm-hmm. That is
correct. Was as much to make sure I was remembering that right as for the listener who may think they heard it wrong, so... Okay.
I am going to get it wrong.
Yeah. And that is, again, very intentional in system and setting. That
what even is politics? I mean, really?
Yeah.
There are a bunch of assholes.
The section on politics in the rule book is called Choose Your Enemy. So that may give you a little bit of texture there. There are two other smaller parties that have sort of more significant roles in government than others. One is essentially a hard right, pro-Western, pro-Earth, kind of on the borderline of fascism party. And then the fourth one is called, I believe, the Techno-Progressive Party, and they are a pro-orbit socialist party. Their big issue is a disconnect between their actual officials and the sort of voting public, who votes for them, having sort of different visions. That actually also comes into play a little bit with both Union and Unity as well, but the electorate for the Techno-Progressive Party is pretty divided. So part of the reason why they're not a bigger factor. A couple of other potential things. We talked in Session Zero about transportation to and from the station. A space elevator is a goal currently, but it does not yet exist. Instead, cheaply reusable rocket launch and landing systems are what is sort of powering solar system shipping at the moment. And so a trip from Earth to Grand Cross typically involves rocket transport to a sort of transportation-centric space station and then boarding an intrasolar system vessel that takes a couple of days to get from that space station to Grand Cross. There is private transit, but it is the province of the very wealthy. Folks who save up for it in some way, shape, or form, could take a round trip from orbit to Earth and back occasionally, every half decade to decade, depending on your status and the going price of transit. Grand Cross is dependent on, you know, economic goods from Earth, but they are doing their best to become more self-sufficient as time goes on. I tried to cover the basics here, but if there's anything that we feel like we need to know here for session one, then this is the time to ask. All right.
Yeah. I will go ahead. Let's learn by living here.
And say that there is mention in the rulebook of there being essentially scheduled weather on Grand Cross. I'm going to take some liberties with this at various times, but assume that unless I say otherwise, it is basically comfy and clear because all of the weather is artificial.
Oh, so it's what everyone thinks LA is.
Less hot wind. Yeah.
Either that or what everyone thinks San Francisco is, depending on whether they've lived in San Francisco before or not.
I mean, I do love San Francisco, and in the 90s it was that weather, except in the winter when it rained all the time.
Sure. So, if there's anything else we want to get before we get into quote-unquote it, now is the time.
Nah, I don't think so.
Excellent.
I'll break the fourth wall slightly and say this has been a long time coming. Let's do this thing.
Yes, I'm excited.
Perfectly fair. Without further ado, I will get us into the scene setting here momentarily. So, Grand Cross, in case it was a little harder to picture from my brief description, is what's called an O'Neill cylinder. It is roughly a hexagon, quite big, and three of the sides are windows, though they are extremely paranoid in their engineering, in order to allow light reflected from the sun off of some mirrors into the station. The other three sides are where the actual ground is. So each strip of five of what are called wards of livable space is separated from the ones on either side of it by one of these gigantic solar windows. The windows themselves have mirrors that fan out from the back of the station, which is further from the sun, and open toward the sun. Those are what is used to reflect the light of the sun into the station during the day. These mirrors then are maneuvered to give the station day and night. So each of the three ground panels has five wards on it, and each of those wards is made up of a number of districts. In general, downtown is the sunward or front edge of the station, and the middle wards are more sparse. They have the majority of like the parkland in the middle. And then toward the quote-unquote back is where some industrial shipping happens, but it's also where like government buildings and kind of public works are. Beyond that, some things that you'd want to know. On the front or sunward side of the station is the agricultural ring, a number of sort of smaller, individually rotating hatbox cylinders where the majority of the food is grown and produced. Most of these are publicly owned, but some have been privatized in the last 3 years. Through the center of the cylinder is a microgravity zone with a sort of high-speed and industrial rail. Most industrial transportation takes place on the outside of the cylinder in microgravity on maglev trains. The cylinder is given its gravity by slow rotation. So one of the ways that people give directions on Grand Cross is downtown, uptown. So that would be towards the sun, away from the sun, and spinward and anti-spinward, for the rotation of the station. Industry tends to be on the outside, which is to say in the basements of the station. There is soil in parks and things. Most transportation is on foot or by moped or by one of the various metro systems. There's an elevated system for faster, longer distance travel and a subway system for more local travel, as well as that spinal rail system in microgravity. And then cars are a thing, but they're uncommon and mostly the province of the very wealthy. Otherwise, Grand Cross tends to be pretty densely built up, and there is an interesting phenomenon where gravity slowly falls off as you move up a skyscraper, of which there are a number. Speaking of tall buildings, though, on the Harbo Plate, nearest the downtown or sunward side, is the Turing Ward. In the Turing Ward, which is a sort of tech utopia, if you will, with utopia in quotation marks there, lies Selden District, built around Grand Cross Polytechnic, or GPOL. It's a university that specializes in applied science and engineering and has a somewhat lesser prestige to the other university districts, but certainly some practical value. Within the Selden District, in addition to the university and a lot of other things, there is a campus bookstore called The Frontispiece. And this is largely where our sort of axis of connection is going to take place. I'm not going to describe too much of Selden District. I'm certainly not going to describe too much of The Frontispiece because it's not mine to describe. But if you would, picture a large, brutalist educational complex in the middle of the Selden District, and then all of the things that you would expect to be surrounding a technical school campus, but super sci-fi and densely built. We're going to pick up with our action around about 5 p.m. orbital time, which is basically synced to UTC, on Thursday, January 2nd, 2020. I'd love to start, Robin, with your character, Cal. Cal, what are you up to around 5 p.m. on a Thursday at the beginning of the year?
Responding to another noise complaint.
There are so many of those, day in, day out.
It's going to make my gray hair go white, I swear.
Almost certainly. This noise complaint, like basically one noise complaint a day, is about Gottlieb's, which is a sort of campus-adjacent bar that frequently has live music.
I'm approaching on my electric bike because, we don't pedal.
So, as you roll up, it becomes clear that basically what has happened is that somebody has propped the door of Gottlieb's open while some really crummy student band has been playing. This has happened, honestly, quite a lot, especially since a recent refurbishment of the place that really just absolutely ruined the acoustics. You've gotten, gone from a noise complaint every week to a noise complaint every day from Gottlieb's since this happened. It's not super crowded at 5 p.m., which is honestly probably worse because it means that there's less in there to absorb the noise. You're not sure what style of music this is. You might describe it as noise for noise's sake.
I gotta say, I'm really worried about these kids and their taste in music and, well, everything. I'm assuming I know the owner if this is a recurring thing.
You know the people who are usually in charge. The owner presumably has never come here.
I seek them out.
Somehow your walk into this establishment conveys sighing, even though any sighs would be inaudible in this environment. And almost, like, let's say four steps into the place, the bouncer just sort of hands up and backs away when you walk in. And four steps in, the shift manager has come out. This is one of the less frustrating shift managers. You honestly don't remember their name. It's some dude with a buzz cut and, you know, an apron that never has anything on it, sort of comes hurrying to you and mouths to you what seems to be the problem, officer. You're not actually sure you've ever successfully heard this manager's voice over the din in this place.
You tell me, Buzz. Why do you think I'm here?
After a beat, Buzz, with finger quotes, sheepishly points to the stage where three anonymous dudes from the student body are thrashing away on various instruments with no apparent rhyme, reason, or coordination between them. There are maybe 13 patrons in this bar right now.
Bingo. Keep it down, all right? Don't make me come back here, or I might start investigating how many IDs you actually check.
The manager gestures exaggeratedly to his ears, shrugs, and then turns from you and walks towards the stage, where without saying anything to the band, he simply just turns down the amps until the noise is merely overwhelming.
I stare at the band until they look in my direction.
It takes a hot minute, but eventually they're all sort of watching you while they're playing, and while their tempo doesn't decrease, their volume does slowly come down, and their enthusiasm cools visibly.
I hold a finger to my lips and then jerk it across my throat.
The one playing some kind of keyboard glances at the one in front of a microphone playing guitar or bass. You can't really tell from here. And the one playing the guitar or bass, you can't really tell from here, just sort of shrugs one shoulder and tries to keep up with the song, if indeed song it can be called.
Well, my work's done here.
As you turn to go, the augvert on your reflex augmenter springs to life and plays a thankfully inaudible little jingle about how Polytech Security Solutions is on your side and here when you need them.
I don't acknowledge it or even bother to cover it up. I just walk towards the door and pointedly remove the door stop and take it with me.
You have a nice collection back at home of door stops. Not all from Gottlieb's, but more
they're
than one
home.
From Gottlieb's.
They're in the office.
Oh, my mistake. Yes. You
and
have
on a particular coworker's desk.
Naturally. If you will permit me, I will rule that as you head back out to your bike, you pull your phone out to quickly check for notifications and see that the Bounty Accountability Network, or BACON, has updated a couple of their more or less pro bono bounties. Though none of them seem to have been last sighted in this area, you do keep an eye on their updates, just in case. Where are you headed next?
Guess I'm just going to take a ride around town. Might as well turn this into patrol before I get stuck back in that office.
You get to your bike, and you take off to amble around the district, just checking things out. While you're doing that, Kato, what's going on with you around 5 p.m. on Thursday, January 2nd?
Well, I'm in the front of the frontispiece. I am arranging microfiche with my left arm. I am moving a stack of dead tree books with my right arm. I actually said that backwards. It's the end of the day. One arm you would notice, though, is much larger than the other. You also might notice that I have a bunch of different skin tones. I'm made of a lot of different parts. Even around here, I probably look, you know, unusual to people. Close-cropped blue hair, not so much. Even the two purple eyes that are a bit different from each other, not that strange. But the sheer number of things I'm made of tends to draw attention. However, there's also a lot of work to do here that has nothing to do with drawing attention, or indeed other people at all. There are textbooks of every kind to be arranged. And you might notice if you came in that this is a bookstore. There's a lot of space for books, but there's apparently a lot of space in the back, more than should be accounted for by the number of books that aren't out front. Speaking of, I probably wander back to check on Gorister and see whether he's done with that kid.
Yeah, so you wander back behind the counter. You don't have any customers right now, so it's not a big deal. And there's Gorister, who is looking annoyed. A student, G-Pole student, with some slightly shoddy augments to their left arm, getting worked on, and Gorister, or G, as he is sometimes known, is frustratedly connecting wires, lubricating actuators, and mumbling to himself. So he's doing about the same as he ever does. Or, if you're feeling uncharitable, maybe as well as he ever does.
Is it going back here, Gorister? That means he'll be done soon. Thanks for coming by, I say to the person he's working on.
The person he's working on is a freshman with what you've come to think of as the tech world clean cut look. A neutral colored polo shirt, some basically non-notable jeans, and a relatively clean cut hairdo. Looking kind of nervous and kind of pale. G kind of mumbles and is just like, I don't understand how they do this to their augs. But not like in a way that's meant to be heard and responded to. This clean-cut little tech neophyte decides to pretend as though he has not heard Gorister's commentary, and Gorister continues working on the afflicted augment apace, seeming content to, well, perform a front to any who might be around without actually interacting with any who might be around, which is, again, more or less par for the course when Gorister has work to do.
I say, my apologies that this took a little longer than anticipated. Please accept this, I size him up, this jailbroken copy of the 48 Laws of Power.
Sorry, that got me. The student sort of looks at you a little wide-eyed and just says, thanks. And then seems to twitch as G does something to his arm.
It's from Earth. You'll like it. So as long as I'm checking on things that legally, at least, do not exist, I think I should go check on Burn. In my head, it's possible that Burn would be somewhere else, but deep down, I know that they're here. And I worry about what would happen if they weren't, in fact.
Well, as is established, or at least has been discussed previously, off mic, Burn identifies as a problem before anything else. And so you are gratified to see that they are there, and he's doing approximately the work assigned, maybe. Sometimes so, it's difficult to tell because, well, software is software.
Bruin's here because they know things I don't about software, too. So I'm not always in a position to... I know more than nothing. I know way more than the average bear or criminal. But I don't always have the knowledge to know whether and how effectively Bruin is working. This might be one of those times.
So, Bruin, if you could give us a brief description of yourself and the kinds of things you might be doing working with software currently.
So, Bruin isn't gangly anymore, but they're built kind of like a structure of a person who got steamrolled, thin, broad, and hopefully might fill out someday. Ethnically ambiguous in skin tone, half white, half not, but with positively copper hair, dressing like it's 1991 unless he's in going to classes mode. Officially I have a fake ID that labels me as 22. Looking upon me, even though you know that the official servers are correct and shouldn't have been hacked, this manifestly is not a 22-year-old. As to what I'm doing, there's symbols and code and brackets on. Mm-hmm. Well, I've flipped on a screen as a courtesy to Cato so that he can actually check what I'm doing. But otherwise, I'd be fiddling with a device on or in my wrist.
I look at what's on the screen. How much do I recognize?
I leave that up to you, Bruin.
How familiar are you with the inner workings of firewalls?
I've dealt with a few in order to jailbreak my parts, but it didn't always go well. That's how I lost my old left arm.
This is something denser than you've dealt with.
I can definitely tell that then. I know that I'd be out of my league, so I cross my arms, which is an interesting sight given the asymmetry, and at the screen meaningfully.
It looks like I sort of hit a couple of lines, paste something in, and then shut the whole thing down and turn the screen off and turn to face you all in sort of one motion. Hey, boss, what can I do?
Just Gorister taking forever, making sure things are going a little better here. It's the time of the night when the officer might stop by, so the more our house is in order, the better.
And I know where to be when the law arrives.
Yeah, no, I know you know. I trust you to keep out of sight. You're doing good work, all of that. I assume don't do anything that's going to pull someone higher up the chain than the officer down on us. Eh?
You know my OPSEC.
I do. You know I do. You know, long day. You know, good talk.
All right. Let me know if there's anything particular you need.
Oh, I will. And I know you'll be up for it.
Cool.
Okay.
And you both get back to your assigned tasks. At least one customer comes into the front of the frontispiece looking for textbooks. It's the beginning, or just before the beginning, rather, of a new term. So you're expecting an uptick in the, you know, textbook business. It's weird to you how many of GPOL's professors and departments require dead tree format books, given the whole technical university thing. I mean, very little of the paper you actually have is wood pulp, but, you know, even then it's weird that more of it isn't digital, but only some of it is digital, which is weird, but to your profit, at least. And so you go back to preparing to face the rush, to help the people who are trickling in a little bit early. And we jump over to Ing. Ing, around 5 p.m., Thursday, the 2nd of January, 2020, what are you up to?
Well, I'm hunched over a desk, gluing the last googly eye onto my drones. Procrastinating, really. I wander over to the other side of the room. It's got a fish tank-sized Zen garden with an ethically sourced arm growing out of it. I take a miniature rake and make a few lines. I'm just trying to generate some ideas. I'm working on a bit of code. Corporations, they get greedy in their building of things, and greed leads to cheap materials. Cheap materials lead to collapse, and sometimes people get hurt. So I've been working on a bit of code that would identify recent rubble and just enlarge the logo of the company that built that particular defective product, graffiti-like. But I've come up against a wall, and so at some point I give up and I head over to the frontispiece. There's some tech heads over there. They might be able to provide some perspective on what I've been working on.
And as you head over, if passersby were to observe you, what would they see?
Yeah, they'd see certainly a human looking male presenting kind of an android, obviously designed to look not quite human, a bit abstract. Certainly the features are all there, and designed to look vaguely menacing, but his posture doesn't bear that out. Moves gracefully, but not in a way that suggests any harm to anyone around him. If anything, trying to look a little bit smaller than he is.
So when you arrive at the frontispiece, there's a regular customer in the front, and so you kind of have to loiter for just a moment.
I'm saying, no, if it were Vellum, you would know it was Vellum. Trust me, it's not Vellum he wants.
Well, but it says right here, surely, I mean, it's a syllabus, right?
There's more than one kind of parchment. Honestly, if you have a professor that's parsing this difference, you're already in trouble, but trust me. I know it's more expensive, but papyrus is what he's looking for.
All right. What's the damage?
I state whatever it would cost to go out drinking too much 3 nights in a row.
This customer groans, but does fork it over, and then mopes out of the frontispiece.
Would mope out with a parchment and a branded tube that says the frontispiece on it.
I love that so much. the branding, especially.
One has to take every opportunity. At this point, I see Aang. I say, so, how's the boil? Which you would know means hard or soft. Where?
squishy, mate. Downright squishy.
Simple enough. Come on back. I lead Aang to burn.
Aang, as you are entering the frontispiece, you are unaware of the fact that Cal, your patrol has brought you down the street right in front of the frontispiece, sort of as you are going, and you see, if I'm not mistaken, your roommate entered the business that pays you off to keep quiet about their non-textbook related activities.
Ding, ding, ding.
Point of order, Adam.
Yes.
Can I roll some manner of hacking to just have an eye out the cameras on the front of the frontispiece?
I would genuinely love it if you would do so. So this is going to be
our first roll.
Woohoo!
And it looks like you have your hacking action as well as a hacking generic. So you're going to be rolling at a +3 for your specialty here?
With stat, no?
Indeed, also with stat, yes.
So that'd be clever, right?
I certainly believe so.
So that would be +6. Indeed. Drew, can you roll 2d6 for me?
You bet I can. Dez is diceless, so I am rolling the den dice on Dez's behalf. D-half?
Den half.
Yeah, there you go. That's a pair of twos.
So that's a 10.
All right. So you are using, in this case, the frontispiece's cameras. You were unwilling to get involved in the sort of law enforcement public cameras with your distraction of your actual work here. You know, easy enough to be sort of spliced into the, you know, business security camera and see the popo coming.
So I do not see them?
You do. Maybe not as far in advance, but not especially material to you.
Just so long as I can get to my home backspace rather than the work backspace of the frontispiece before anyone comes to see me.
Indeed. Burn, you scramble appropriately.
Kato may hear something as I vanish through a wall into a different backspace.
I turn to Aang and say, that might not be the best news for your project.
Oh boy. Officer Armitage.
And it isn't about at that time, I presume, and I don't want to pilot anyone else's character, that Cal, you might enter the frontispiece?
Oh, yeah.
I'm also now in all of our security systems and have whatever the equivalent of texting, IMing. I have directly IMed into Kato's brain. Figured I should disappear.
It pops up on your HUD in text, Kato.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take care of this. A moment.
All right, so Kato, you turn toward the entrance right as Cal enters. Cal, this would maybe be a great time for you to describe what Kato is seeing as you enter. Not an unfamiliar sight to Kato, but an unfamiliar sight to our listeners.
Well, there's something sharp and lethal in my appearance, not just because I'm currently clad in Polytech Security Solutions assigned uniform. I'm also going gray. My salt and pepper hair is kept in a low maintenance cut and has been that way for years, even if it's gotten more progressively salt than pepper. But despite the decades passing, they haven't really worn away at the sharpness. It's still very much there in the glint of my eye or the glimpse of muscle under age-softened curves. Even out of uniform, I kind of pride myself on being someone that people don't really spare a passing glance for. In the same way you might avoid eye contact with a cop, you certainly wouldn't look at a middle-aged woman dressed in unremarkable dark clothes. And I certainly avoid those traditional trappings of femininity, like makeup, jewelry, nail polish, just because femininity's failed to tell the whole story of who I am. I'm 5'4", relatively short, but I carry myself like I'm much taller, in true cop fashion. And those who do pay attention might get the sense they're watching a sleepy, lumbering bear emerging from their den. One that's acutely aware of the unwelcome attention with all the unnatural sense of a predator accustomed to contested territory.
So, Kato, you weren't expecting to see Officer Armitage today. But, here they are.
Well, I trot out to the front, officially the only part that really exists, and I say, good evening, officer.
Evening. I'm just out on the beat, responding to a noise complaint. I'm keeping your nose clean over here, kid?
Nose clean, noise clean, all of the above.
Yeah, I know the noise complaint wasn't coming from you. Say, what are you kids even listening to now these days? I casually run my finger along one of the books that's within arm's reach.
Synthwave comes sort of slowly piping out of the filters. Just sort of the low impact music that you browse books to.
We keep it pretty synthwave in here, officer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Smart. Keep the volume down. I'd hate to have to respond to a call here. I look at you.
No, of course, of course. Your order's ready, by the way. This is not a branded tube that I extract from under the counter. It's a small branded box that a disc might come in. It contains probably what it would take. You'd have to go out drinking about 100 nights in a row for what it contains. This is a regular payment, though not, of course, daily. I had a feeling it was coming, though I didn't think it would be today, and the fact that it's today isn't ideal.
So while this conversation is going on, Ing, you are acutely aware that some different poles of your life may be coming in contact in your presence here. I let you decide exactly how separate those tools have been up till now.
Also, I've locked any doors that I have access to in the security system to prevent Ing from going further into the back spaces.
Presumably you have access to every lock in the space. So.
Yes, but I respect the fact that I know there are back spaces that I don't have access to.
Sure, fair enough, fair enough. Hmm.
And I lock the back spaces that access them.
You didn't necessarily lock Gorister and his patients in. Yeah.
I have for the moment, unless there's an emergency, I'm keeping an eye on it.
Okay, fair. We've talked about fire safety before. I choose to trust you.
Dangerous, but probably the right move.
So, if you can imagine a 6-foot robot in a heavy combat frame trying to look small and unobtrusive.
I picture you holding a random book upside down in front of your face.
That's not inaccurate. I engage my psychic invisibility, which actually doesn't exist. Officer Armitage, fancy seeing you here at this ordinary bookstore. Bookstore. Something. I don't know why I said ordinary. I mean, it's quite extraordinary if you really... how's your day so far?
Something clenches in my jaw, and I simply nod at you. And turn my attention back to Cato. Taking my latest order with what could pass as a smile if it weren't more or less me baring my teeth.
Didn't realize you two knew each other.
I take pride on knowing most of the students on campus.
I nod.
I also nod.
Back in the back room, I also nod with the thought, he doesn't know me.
There is a beat of uncomfortable silence, during which two things happen simultaneously, one in the front and one in the back. First, in the front, Cal, you get a message with a PSS priority tag on it from Officer Vector Ramirez. Simultaneously, Burn, you get a private message that kind of pops up, distracting you from all the other more immediate things that you're doing. What's interesting for our listeners is that while it is unknown to our player characters, they contain very similar information. Officer Ramirez is telling you, Cal, that he's gotten a anonymous tip that he hasn't passed along up the command chain because he thinks that you're probably the best one to handle it quietly. Burn, you have gotten a private message from an online acquaintance of yours that goes by the alias K&B that there's a matter that might interest you or your employer or both, that a modicum of information is available for no particular cost, if you're interested.
Always interested. Why would I not be interested in information that doesn't particularly cost?
Indeed. And so there's a follow-up message containing roughly the same information, Cal, that you are receiving when you open the message from Officer Ramirez. Details are sketchy, but there is a credible rumor, sourceless for now, that one of the faculty at G-Pole is heading this weekend to some kind of gray market auction for technology that probably shouldn't be booted up in the lab. This is, Cal, a little beyond your expertise. It's certainly the sort of thing that you would like to know, and that's why Ramirez has sent it to you. But faculty, technology, it's, you know, when you've handled these things in the past, it hasn't been solo, suffice to say. Burn, separately, in the back here, this is the kind of information that you love to get, but doesn't sound like a solo op to you.
I'll ping back with one, thanks. Two, should I be distressed that you know my boss? Three, is this a danger to whoever boots it up in the system it's on, or more broadly, do you know?
The response in text comes with an elaborate shrugging emoticon constructed out of traditional symbols and punctuation, as well as diacritical marks and maybe some kanji.
So that's all three of those. Sure, fine. Well, thank you.
I
will forward the first message scrubbed of metadata and source information as securely encrypted between the two of us to Cato.
Mm-hmm. And Cal, you were saying?
As this is going on, I text back to Officer Ramirez. On it. Thanks. And I'm assuming emojis still exist.
Oh, certainly.
So I send the one with the finger held to their lips.
A cop keyboard only has that one.
No, it also has the shrug.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, it has the shrug, and it has the one that I never use, which is a laughing face. But
yeah,
yeah. So right around the time, Cato, that you see Officer Armitage, you know, sort of tapping away on their phone. You get the message forwarded from Burn in the back, scrubbed of information containing this, or scrubbed of metadata, rather, containing this information.
It's there, followed by just a very, like, size 96 point question mark.
Comic Sans.
Georgia.
Georgia.
Not a monster. I'm just a hacker.
I respond not with an emoticon, or not with an emoji, but with an emoticon. The like the lion smile one that's like the carrot and then the eyes and then the three. Yeah, that's all I say. I do this while attempting to have a poker face, but probably failing not to smirk slightly.
Yeah, but you spend like 90% of your time smirking anyway.
You're not wrong. I'm just currently talking to a cop who I'm bribing, so, so poker face would be smarter.
Yeah, as opposed
to 90% of your time smirking. Anyway.
Also true.
This is the 10%. Clearly,
the cop has seen this before.
So it's true. In this smirthful moment, there is a like beat and a half of silence. And then Cal, your Augvert clicks on and flashes in police light red and blue a couple of times, followed by an authoritative sounding voice that says, Polytech Security Solutions, we're here to keep you safe. And then there's a little jingle that incorporates sirens. And then it shuts down. Yes?
Is it possible to, like, alter the synth wave to, like, cancel out the noise of that?
Not on the fly, but you could prepare something for next time.
Cool. I would like to prepare something for next time.
Make a note of it. Next time it comes up, let me know and we'll have you roll then.
I pretend like that doesn't happen and clear my throat importantly as I put my my phone away. Hey kid, I have my Augvert squeaking again, as it turns out. Do you mind can we step in the back and have a little conversation?
No problem. We're finishing up with another special order, but I'll tell him to finish up and it's all yours.
Maybe we could just make sure. I look at Ing. No one else comes in.
I put down my book and notice that I've been reading the dictionary upside down.
What volume?
Which language?
I'm going to go with English, actually, and you had opened to the page that had the entry for pyramid on it, so you were interested in learning the new word dimmerip. but it turns out it's not one.
Speaking of, I message the problem and say, have you locked all the doors?
All that are accessible from where anyone currently relevant is.
You get a dot dot dot, and then you get a lock all the doors.
How sensitive is your hearing?
Intensely.
You hear six more bolts slide home.
I count. then I make my way back to Gorister. I'm gonna have to kick this kid out whether he's done or not. It's starting to feel like I say to Cal, you may want to wait up front and read a book just so that I can clear out the back.
I was making sure Kato was out of the room.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming Cal doesn't want to be seen by the other people who come to the illegal business, to the illegal business. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
For sure, yeah.
What were you doing at the Devil's Sacrament?
I was only there to find directions to get away from there.
Kato, you walk in to discover that Gorister has finished with the work he was doing and is telling the clean-cut tech freshman in an extraordinarily bored voice the care and feeding of his augment. The tech freshman
doors basically unlock themselves as you walk, Kato.
The tech freshman looks like he would rather be anywhere else right now and takes your arrival as a more or less divine intervention in this matter.
Excellent. I say, about done here, huh?
Yeah, about done. Go on. Don't fuck up your arm. Or do. I guess I get paid either way. The customer nods, opens his mouth, closes it, and essentially bolts.
I say, enjoy the book. Heard of Sun Tzu, Jay-Z?
There is no response other than Gorister rolling his eyes.
So it's like a back way that he goes out, because we probably don't want him going by Cal.
A side door.
Okay, let's rule we have a side door, which I assume unlocks as he gets lights, close to it. Yeah.
Lights up, direct him, and things unlock as are within his security clearance, and he has gotten the hell out.
Excellent.
Also, you have terrible 90s rap in your head now.
Yes. During this time, Ing and I are alone in the front, right?
Indeed, yeah, go ahead.
I glance sidelong at Ing, conscious just through that kind of weird, uncanny feeling that we might be still observed somehow, since a lot of illegal operations are also highly paranoid and have some measure of security as a result. The corner of my lip just barely quirks up, and I say, be careful here, kid.
Right. What do you know about this store?
That's not something you should ask an officer.
No. Obviously, I was referring to the restricted section of the library.
Oh, obviously. They have a very good restricted section. I hear it's allowed to operate and obtain rare volumes a bit more frequently than others. Thanks to connections I have within the literary world.
They're so bad at speaking in cipher.
I get that in my ear, metaphorically or not, as I'm explaining to Gorister.
I'm looping you into the audio feed as well.
Excellent. Yeah. I just mean it so sudden I can probably also see it as well as hear it in my mind. halfway through explaining to Gorister that he can't go home yet. He's got one more. And he should probably put his heart into this one.
By the time you're telling Gorister this, he has his phone out and has already loaded up like a puzzle game and sighs dramatically and puts it in his pocket, sort of combs blonde hair back away from his brow and goes,
all right.
I solved G's puzzle for him.
Does not notice immediately.
No, that's a surprise for later.
Yeah, exactly. I guess this is there was an interruption there to Cal and Ing's conversation. The two of you have anything else that you're trying to convey in poorly disguised cipher to one another, or is Cal proceeding directly to the back room?
Ing, do you have anything else to say?
Yeah, look, I'll try to keep a low profile and keep safe, of course, but kind of could use some more money, and every once in a while I stock the books.
Well, why are you telling this to a police officer? Do you want this on the record, kid?
Nope. No officer.
So bad at ciphers.
Thought so.
Tell me when I can arrive and stop this train wreck.
You can arrive currently.
Ing, hey, you are going to have to wait, and this is a great conversation to not continue. Officer, right back here.
Thank you. Stay safe, kid.
You get an IM. It includes three links, one of which is a dummy to, like, a you've been fished. The other two are PDFs of OPSEC and general, like, talking about secure matters.
On that point, we've established Cal gets these sort of communications on their phone. Mm-hmm. Kato has sort of an in-senses heads-up display. Presumably, Vern, you have, you know, multiple monitors and, like, a hacking deck that you can receive these communications on. Ing,
most of this is being done with hacking deck and appropriate headphones or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Ing, are you using some kind of incense heads up display, or are you getting any kinds of private messages through some external device?
Feel like I've got a burner phone or equivalent.
Yeah.
So this is the retro future, and so it's probably some kind of a smart burner phone, but
sure.
Yeah, it's something that is only temporary and something that I bought on Grand Cross.
Mm-hmm. Just both painting the picture for our listeners and also giving us a sense of how immediate your awareness of messages received for each of you will be.
And let's say I'm responding using the delicate work arm. It would look like I was holding up a hand like I was counting to four. And in fact, the thumb is quite articulate and can type out responses to messages relatively discreetly.
I love that. So, Kato, you lead Cal through the door into the back where currently the only other person in evidence is Gorister.
So, what seems to be the problem? The thing acting up.
What do you know about gray markets?
Officially, absolutely nothing, officer.
Officially, yes, but how about unofficially?
Unofficially? Gorister?
Clearly was not paying attention to this conversation, goes, so much.
Gray markets, plural. I say, trying to save this thing. It really depends what you're looking for, how gray the market is, and how accessible, I'm told.
And what it's for. I supply, again, to your incenses.
I do not add this.
I got some... I got some information that I might need help with. Might make, yeah, depending on your cooperation, it may make my less, well, let's say it'll make my next order less intensive.
That seems helpful, getting ahead of the orders. Sure. What are you looking for?
Gorister goes, I feel like I'm not super necessary. Can I go?
Yes.
The door opens.
Anyone
also,
keeping...
Also, you are sent a link to a definition for entrapment, Kato.
I am out of the corner of my eye reading all about the U.S. government in mosques in the early 21st century.
Gorister leaves through the side door. Anyone keeping a special ear out, whether physically or otherwise, will be able to hear him muttering something about coffee and ambling as though in no great hurry, with a posture that seems quite affronted. The door closes.
As a courtesy, I do call his order ahead.
I'll be straight with you, kid. I have some intel that some harmful tech might be acquired on the gray market and wind up back here on campus. I don't want that. You don't want that. So how can I
want that.
Enlist your help?
Oh, it does sound like the kind of thing that people come in here looking for. Not that we've ever helped them out, of course. We generally just read the law chapter and verse, and perhaps the Bible as well. But in this case...
Of course.
In this case, I think perhaps we could come to some kind of understanding. What kind of tech?
I hold up my finger and pull out my phone and text back to Ramirez on the case, but might need more details on the tech.
It takes just a moment for Ramirez to get back to you saying, all we've got is that no one recognizes it.
Something we haven't seen before.
That's interesting. There aren't too many of those things.
Calm your excitement. This is a serious matter.
I do that face where I'm smiling but pretending to frown.
No, Kato, you know, you may already be thinking this, but audio being the medium and all, this is pretty coincidental given the information that Byrne sent you earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It seems unlikely to you that Byrne and Cal's sources are the same. So, to Byrne's priorities, there seems to be a lack of OPSEC here, which,
yes,
you know, is perhaps both worrying and
I am just galvanizing. Sort of increasingly, like, worried links that you recognize the progression of. You are used to this style of overreaction at bad OPSEC.
I say, over the secure channel, I say, stop educating me and tell me where you heard about this.
The metadata appears in the digital equivalent of like grumpy teenager. Fine. It's almost certainly different from wherever the officer got it.
And for what it's worth, Kato, you are probably, I'm going to go dimly aware of K and B's existence, but mm-hmm. maybe haven't had direct communications in the past.
Okay. I'm trying to think how I play this one here. Mm-hmm. I say, this does seem like something where your skill set and mine overlap. If I may be completely frank, how can I be sure that this isn't? And I cite 5 or 6 cases about entrapment. Ronald and
in the meantime, I have sent back to KNB. There's a cop asking about the same sort of thing. This doesn't feel coincidental. What the fuck?
The immediate response from KMB is Raffle in all caps, and then an indication that a longer message is being typed.
Frankly, kid, I'm not sure I could convince you of that in uniform. I don't trust you further than I can toss you, which is not far. My bike doesn't have pedals. You've seen it. What agreement can we come to? Adam.
Yes.
I have investigation as a specialty.
Sure do.
I'm sure that I'm getting the sense of something going on mm-hmm. with Kato.
Yeah, so let's have you roll your investigation specialty of +2 along with your... this is going to be a cool attribute since it's a social situation of +2. So
it's
going to be
contested roll.
2d6 +4 for Cal, and I guess it depends on what Kato your disposition in this conversation is.
That's a good question. It's a good question. Honestly, I am inclined to go along with this because it's too interesting not to. I'm less concerned with OPSEC than Byrne is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably more convincible than I'm letting on.
Okay, I'm going to make it versus a standard difficulty then, because you're not, like, actively, you know, trying to hide more than just, like, your standard interactions with Cal. So, Robin, go ahead and roll that 2d6 plus 4, please.
On the din dice. Ooh! Got a 6 and a 4. So that's right. 14.
Nice.
Indeed.
Bad for me, but nice.
Yeah, so, it takes you this far into the conversation to figure it out, but you've, not recently, mind, but in your past, you have had conversations like this. And they've been ones where the person you're talking to is being fed lines.
Mm-hmm.
Around this time, I am feeding Cato the line. Either get it in writing or arrange some manner of mutually assured destruction level of intelligence sharing.
Well, Cal Ball's in your court as far as the actual conversation goes.
I see and catch it this time, the kind of twitch of eyes as the information is being processed. I'm starting to trust you a little less. Since it seems you know more about this than you're letting on, or your friend does, at least.
I grin.
Can I hack Cal's phone?
I mean, I guess, let me put it this way. You can start that process and roll for it. And we'll
sure,
see where it goes.
Let's do that.
All right.
Nick, could you... Robin, could you roll for your phone? Or for me, rather.
What am I rolling?
2d6.
Yeah, so this is going to be your clever is...
Same roll, so plus 6.
And your hacking is plus 3, so 2d6 plus 6.
That's a 10.
So 16.
Well, actually, it's a 4 plus 6, so 10 right. total.
So both of you had rolled 4s for me.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, I blame your dice.
They're working well for me.
So,
except in this.
Yeah.
Dan trolling Dez, even in absentia. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bern, you find, to your consternation, that the phone that Cal is carrying has... Yes, the standard PSS sort of cybersecurity suite, but then some other stuff. So you're pretty confident that you could get into this phone. Whether you can do it before this conversation ends or not has suddenly become dubious.
Can I try again, but with Ing's phone? Since I've established that they know each other?
You can, but we're going to wait for the conversation to proceed a little ways before we do that.
Yeah, no.
So, that is a good...
Set that on deck.
Yeah, that is a good time, perhaps, to check in, though. Ing, it's only been a few minutes, but they have been a long few minutes. What are you getting up to in the front here? And I guess, how settled are you in this awkward position?
Yeah, well, now that the pressure's off and all the people are really out of the room, I'm actually enjoying myself a little bit, digging into the books in earnest, put the dictionary away for sure, and picked up a philosophy book. So just trying to work my way through that. Some pretty interesting stuff.
Cato, what book is Ing likely to have picked up in the philosophy section of your bookstore?
Well, I don't know how much time Ing has to read. Probably The Ship of Theseus is definitely there. He would have had to pick between that and Aristotle's text about how if tools could act autonomously, slaves would no longer be necessary, and that would be a great tragedy, since some people just need to serve.
Yeah. The official stance of the Dice Punks podcast is fuck Aristotle.
I didn't think it needed to be said, but let's say it anyway. Yeah, fuck Aristotle.
It needs to be said.
It needs to be repeated.
I mean, whether or not it needs to be said, I wanted to say it.
All we have left are his students' lecture notes rather than his own writing itself. and therefore some shit gets wonky in translation. Oh. Feel free to cut any of that you feel like, Adam.
So, Ing, that is what you have in your hands currently while you are enjoying the sort of more placid environment of having the front of the house to yourself, so to speak.
Yeah. So just and then, engrossed in the book. You know, there's peace in that, and the rest of the world just fades into the background for a while.
Yeah, and then comes the time for Burn's next hacking roll for Ing's phone.
Hey, Nick, could you roll 2d6 for me? Please roll well.
Sure can. That is a 5 and a 3.
So that's 14 total, then.
14 total. This is an easier entry. Not as much security overall. And you're in. You don't maybe have, like, comprehensive access, but certainly enough to do most things.
Contacts for Cal or whatever is nearest to that, mm-hmm. or officer.
Ing, what would Burn find doing that?
Well, hold on. Would you know that my name is Cal?
Up to the two of you, I suppose.
I'd have looked you up, yes.
Okay.
Matter of public record, officer.
That.
You would be looking for
Wait till
Callisto.
You find out. Once you find out they know your badge number, you're really going to hate that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So you'd be looking for Callisto and probably end up settling on Cal. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, then, Ing, what is Burn likely to find looking with that through your phone?
Yeah, so I would say an Officer Armitage is in the phone under that name, Officer Armitage. Mm-hmm.
Cool, I lift the number. Nice, that's all I'm in there for.
All right.
Granted, all I'm in there for, and then I leave sort of a snoop around for something interesting. Go be autonomous. Mm-hmm. And then I text Officer Armitage.
All right. In the intervening, let's call it like 90 seconds or so, where has the conversation between Cal and Kato gone?
Vilas just smiled at me.
I was grinning when I realized that Cal knew I was getting fed lines or given information. I said, well, you don't trust me and I don't trust you. That's a surprisingly good place to start, isn't it?
Sure. It's burned me before. And I wrap my knuckles against the metal on the side of my skull.
I gesture at my entire body, which is made up of component parts.
Touche. I just assumed it was like tattoos or something.
Metal or crab arms.
You get a text. An email from no particular source, that is to say, there is no source listed, that lists first a link with actually a like preview screen under it for entrapment to of course there's security here, officer, and three, all we just need is enough dirt on each other to ensure that nobody fucking spills. Officer.
Do I get CC'd on all of this?
Absolutely.
CC'd or BCC'd? This is an important distinction.
BCC'd.
Okay.
I flash the email at Kato, assuming that, you know, it's not already flashing across your eyes.
I assume that Kato maybe looks a little sort of more rigor mortis-y than we did before.
I'm talking to both of you, then. I've been in this business for 36 years.
Good to
I've got...
Comes over the speakers.
And technology may change. The security system you've had here for a while may change. It's not what's keeping you guys safe. Something happens to me, then you will not be prepared for the swarm that will come down on this bookstore.
Sure, sure. Fire, fury, flames of wrath, mutually assured destruction, I think, is the name of the game here.
There are likewise much worse things than me, than us, as far as the black, the gray, the light gray market. So I think it's in both of our interests that this arrangement continues, and I think destruction doesn't need to be assured.
There's just the promise of it to keep everybody behaving fucking nicely.
What they said.
I'm so glad we could agree, officer.
I respect someone that has the guts to email me after, I'm assuming, looking me up from my frequent visits, keeping tabs on me.
Nah, I got your phone number elsewhere.
Hmm.
So, Ing, what are you up to in the front of the house?
I'm looking around, whistling a bit, put down one book, pick up. I'm just trying to wait until somebody comes and talks to me so that I can ask about a job.
Well, good news for you, question mark. Somebody has come into the shop and assumes that you work there.
Through the locked
the door?
Locked.
Oh, I didn't realize the very front door was locked, too. My bad. There's
all
a
the doors
knock.
Are locked,
I understand that. Now that we have, you know, of course, I had the between part in my head. In any case, there is a knock then at the front door. And, Ing, you're the only one in evidence there. Somebody is rapping at the door leading into the public part of the frontispiece.
All right. I look around. Is the front door glass or is it
there is a frosted
opaque
window about 1.5 feet on a side, roughly at like, you know, shoulder and head level, but it's not like you can see anything more than just a shape outside.
I'll flick an image of the external camera to Kato with a question mark of, do I let him in?
Well, Kato, the image that you get on your HUD is of somebody you don't recognize who is probably a student, just knocking on the door, looking a little bit perturbed.
I go to the door and see if I can let him in. Not sure if it's bolted or if it's actually unlocked from the inside.
Yeah, you can't figure out how it works. You just start fiddling with it. in the meantime,
I give an apologetic shrug to the blur outside of the window pane.
I message, I guess this is Ing's chance to apply for a job.
The bolt unlocks, the door opens. You don't know what happened, I suspect.
Mm. Yeah, indeed not. The person who enters is a notably short, relatively unremarkable-looking student, almost certainly. Short-haired, fairly kind of conventionally male-presenting. Person who looks surprised both that the door was locked and that it has now opened, and seems surprised to see an android. His mouth opens and closes a couple of times standing in the doorway, and sort of you can almost see the 19th century style industrial gear teeth wheels turning in the student's head.
I wince a little bit as he looks uncomfortable, perhaps, and said, try to put on my best friendly voice. Hello, good day. Welcome to the frontispiece. Are you looking in for anything in particular today? I come here a decent bit myself and might be able to direct you.
The student opens his mouth and closes it and says, You're Australian?
So it seems. I was originally programmed perhaps by those that found the accent amusing, if not necessarily authentic.
Wow. Well, yeah, I'm here to get my, textbooks.
What courses are you taking? I'm a student myself.
Oh, I'm second semester, so I've got, like, bioethics 100 and, like, the core computer science courses, and then I'm in, like, more mechanical engineering, so I have a list of just, like, really specific books I need for that. And, I mean, this student just does not stop talking for the rest of the time that he's in your presence, just drawing out sentences.
Send you texts of the locations of each book named as it's named.
Mm.
To whatever your like internal like mechanism is for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
with, like thumbs up emojis.
Yeah, I don't necessarily have an internal device that displays things directly. Because it felt like a bit of a security risk, as much as I'm naive about some things. Tech isn't necessarily one of them, even though hacking is nowhere near my specialty. But I do help the student to the best of my ability. A little bit uncomfortable, perhaps, from an external perspective, doing my best to be really kind of over-the-top friendly, outgoing, you know, trying to connect around the bioethics and the mechanical engineering in particularly, asking if he's got any interest in flesh horticulture. And after... after an awkward pause, changes the subject.
So during this, you help the student who's who gives his name as Jorma. You know, help him find a number of books, and then have the awkwardness of bringing up flesh horticulture, and it quickly becomes clear that while Jorma has seen androids before, you are probably the first one that he has had a conversation with. And you know, he's trying, but he does have to try, which is, you know, perhaps as telling as anything about you know, his youth and background. While this is going on, we jump back to the conversation between Kato and Cal. Tense and familiar in equal parts so far. How are things going here?
I think we're hashing out terms. We're figuring out what mutually assured destruction looks like. One of the terms I mentioned is you. So now... the kid has revealed himself, but don't ask too many questions and don't expect to ever see their face.
That's fair. All I care about is keeping this campus safe. You guys aren't a threat to that.
Quite the opposite.
Kato gets a shrugging emoji.
You're helping.
Is there an emoticon that's like an accusing point? I do that one.
Yeah. More or less. I think I can picture it. So
comes with a strong subtext of you.
You. Yeah, exactly.
While Ing is helping Jorma get his books, would it be fair to say that Kato and Cal are coming to an arrangement by which they can share information, work together on this whole potentially dangerous campus-adjacent gray market auction that you've been alerted to?
Sure.
Sure. I don't expect you to share your sources, don't expect me to share mine, but we can work on this together.
You're helping me.
Sure. Officer.
I'll remember that next time I get a similar ping about intel of a bookstore that's at the front.
That sounds terrible. Wouldn't know anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
We try to maintain our reputation around here.
I know. You could do better by that, by the way.
Work in progress.
Clearly.
That was not an in-character guffaw. That was just coming. Well, I'll be in contact as soon as I know something, which shouldn't be long, and we'll proceed.
Well, you clearly have my number.
So I'm going to take this opportunity to jump back to Ing in the front here. Mm-hmm. Ing, Jorma is that kind of awkward that people get when they really don't want to be racist, but they're scared that they may already have been racist. And so as you have been combing through the store to help him find the books he needs, and you're almost done, he has become more and more of sort of a babbling but congenial kind of conversationalist. You're saying less and less, he's saying more and more. Around about the time that Cal, you are about ready to emerge from the back room here.
After getting Kato's number.
Yeah. I had assumed you'd already had it, but yes, certainly. Mm-hmm. Have, you know, the backup that you might need to track down this lead. It is perhaps just in time to hear part of the statement from Jorma. Like, you know, I really haven't, like, met that many androids myself, but you seem cool, and honestly, like, I'm really into the kind of tech that you guys are all, you know, like, built on. In fact, over the course of last semester, found this really cool group of guys, the Terabyte Boys. I don't know if you've heard. They came into some really cool tech recently. Looks over at Cal.
Is there business done here?
Yep. Runs out the door, no books.
I try just as he's turning to put a crumpled flyer for the android rights movements into his hand and say, if you'd like to meet more.
Yeah, he does not look at it at all, but grabs it and bolts out the door. Now, Cal, you've actually heard this name before. The Terabyte Boys are a small-time gang from another neighborhood that has just started to make inroads in the Selden District. And, you know, what he was saying seems kind of relevant to what you heard from Ramirez earlier.
Well...
Bez just sent in the chat of the call what I assume is also an in-world text, which was OPSEC JFC.
Yes.
In all caps.
So what exactly was he... Could you refresh my memory on what he was saying about the Terabyte Boys? Because my brain got hung up on the reference of Ing and android kind as tech.
Indeed. So in that sort of panicky way, he was... talking about having some contacts among the Terabyte Boys who recently came into some cool tech that they were, and then that's about where the conversation ended.
Excellent. Kato, are you behind me?
Oh yeah. That sounds like a lead. Is that what you call him?
That's exactly what I was getting ready to say to you. We've got ourselves a lead.
Ing, you feel very forgotten in this conversation.
Mm-hmm. listen, Cato, don't mean to interject here, but I feel like I was helpful. This customer that just came to your store, not technically a customer, I suppose, didn't buy anything, but could have. wondering if there's any hours at the bookstore that, you know, looking, I could maybe pick up a shift here and there. I don't have many references, but, dependable sort.
Oh, good, so I can get more of their money.
I'm looking at Cal when I say this. We have a pretty extensive vetting process for employees here, but you were very helpful right there, and I believe that you can make your first sale sooner than later. You're hired.
Brilliant.
I somehow managed to glare at both of them simultaneously.
And I just have a... Sorry.
Cross my arms.
I have a feeling I'm going to be away from the shop for a bit, so your timing is excellent.
Hopefully by this point I may have gotten something like Ing's name or other relevant things off of his phone.
Ing's been in before, so you've probably had plenty of opportunities to snoop.
Oh, okay, never mind that. Yeah.
Right at about that moment, a group of, let's say like five students, upperclassmen, you know, kind of mixed company of, you know, various sorts come in, and immediately start making requests for textbooks, until of course they see the cop, at which point they all get very quiet and move out of the way of the door.
It's a little hard to bring in money when,
you're awkward. When what? Pipes up. Right at that moment, the police red and blue flashes a couple of times with a little jingle behind it, Burn, you were going to roll, I believe, your second attempt.
Cato, would you do the honors?
That's a pair of fives on the dice.
16. A 16. So within the immediate capabilities of this Ogvert to broadcast, Burn, what are you aiming for?
Just the sound off.
Just the sound off. All right. What happens is the lights and the PSS logo come on, and there is about a second and a half of Polytech Secure. And then the rest of it happens in pantomime.
You also get a text that just contains a bye-bye waving hand, Cal.
I, for the first time, react to the Ogvert going off in my arm, and my lip quirks up a little bit.
And honestly, I think that's where we're going to end our session for this time. We'll commence our second episode with prep for how we go about addressing this whole potentially dangerous auction thing, and maybe even get into the mission itself. We'll see how it goes. But this time I feel pretty good about having, you know, introduced our characters, their situation, their task.
I have a dumb question. Is there XP in the system?
There is. You don't get any this time. It is more of a milestone system. So as we accomplish things, we will acquire XP. And I appreciate all the excellent work that our players did this time. That will conclude this session of Dicebox. Thank you for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you'll join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com and on co-host and Tumblr as @DicePunks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell, so say goodbye to the kind folks back on Earth, players.
Thanks for listening, and remember, ACAB includes Aristotle.
Would Wouldn't that be Aab?
Oh, it would, I guess.
I got nothing. Thanks for listening. That broke me.
That's perfectly fair. Thanks for listening, folks, and fucking OPSEC. Be good about it. You know, or be good, whatever.
Thanks, everyone, for listening and being in this space with us as we are in this space with us. We are in space.
In space.
In space.
In space.
And as the poet once said, for here am I sitting in my tin can far above the world. Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for Luke's Lies. The main theme for this campaign, Augment or Die, is by Emerson Boatwright and our very own mechanical person, Drew. You can find links to more of their music in the show notes. Editing and our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who's appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by the one and only Officer Armitage, Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Machevic, Freya Erlingsdaughter, and Minerva McJonda. You can find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/hardwiredisland with hyphens between those three words. Links to the system and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, DicePunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord, and access to the Dice Peaks after show for episodes 1.1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
Gravity's weird. It's been years, and I'm still not used to how high jumping carries you. Well, some places. How the force of my hoverboard does more to drive me down if I invert it midair than the most inevitable of forces. Well, most inevitable aside from aggression. I think that's some of the reason I haven't gotten caught yet. I tend to go low rather than high on the bounce. So, yeah, gravity. It's weird. When I first got to space, I had this rock from home. I'd hit it in my hand. Yeah, this was back when you could size up your prosthetics as you aged. And so it was weighted in for liftoff as if it was a part of me, which, well, it was. When I'd get frustrated and stuff, plenty of shit's frustrating when you're a kid, even aside from the new in space and the social workers asking well-meaning but dumb questions and having more money than sense, although the adults around me swiftly changed both parts of that. When I'd get frustrated, I used to take the rock out of my hand and just drop it to see how slowly it fell. As if time were moving slower. As if a clever twist of the hand could reverse it. Sorry. You were asking where I'm from. Well, there's your answer anyway. Not fucking here.